But today we get to finish up the series, We Dare You. And man, I have enjoyed doing this with you guys and been with this. And if you've been with us from the beginning, we talk about, you know, the different things. We dare you to follow Jesus. That's where we started off, to follow Jesus with all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your mind. And then we said, we dare you to serve. And we talk about that in week number two, how to serve, and how to serve in our church, how to serve, you know, people in ministry. We talk we dare to grow. We dare you to grow in your walk, and to walk with other believers in small groups, in life groups, in discipleship groups. And so we dare you to grow. We also talk about in week number four, we dare you to be generous, to be faithful in the way that you give, and be given people. Christians are to be given people, generous people. Last week, we dared you to go and share your faith, invite people to church. And today, we dare you to care. We dare you to care. And I love good dares. You know, we've talked about the different dares. And I want to wrap up this last one. This past summer, I was in Colorado. Our family was in Colorado for 3 weeks. And we just kind of were living in hotels and Airbnbs for 3 solid weeks. And at the last day of our time in Colorado, and the last morning, and we were staying in Estes Park, Colorado, which is just outside the foothills, the mountains of the Rocky Mountain National Park. And it's a beautiful area. And we were going to pack up, and we were going to, you know, drive the long drive home from Colorado. And so that morning I told Karen, I said, you know, I'm going to get up real early before we pack up, before, you know, while y'all still in bed. I'm going to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I'm just going to go by myself into the park, you know, right when the sun starts to come up, and I'll get to sit in this area, and I'm hoping there's going to be a moose, you know, when I see the sun, and just kind of take it all in. There was a beautiful little lake, little pond that was right there, and so I kind of sat there, got me a cup of coffee, went through a coffee, and it was just me, and rolled down the window, that nice, cool mountain air, and just really kind of reflecting, you know, just with God and just with everything that was happening, and the sun started to come up, you know, and it started to lit up that valley. And sure enough, right in the middle of that valley was a moose. And it was just like, okay, God, this was great. That was for me. That was a gift. And I just kind of sat there for about 30 minutes. There's nobody else. Just me. And about 30 minutes into it, people started showing up and photographers and all that. And but I had that time. And I headed back to the hotel. And it was kind of a sad thing for me because, okay, we're leaving. You know, there was this finality for me. Hey, we're headed home in a minute. I get to the hotel and wake up the kids. Karen's already up, getting ready. You know, I got to pack up the car, and then we're going to, you know, we start to drive. And it's a long drive. It's 1,300 miles from Estes Park to here. And the plan was to spend a night somewhere in Illinois, along the way. So we start driving through Nebraska. And, you know, Nebraska, if you've never drove through Nebraska, the best way for me to describe it is it's like driving through Ohio twice. It's long. And it's a long drive. And then, just when you get through Nebraska, it's Iowa. And Iowa is more of the same. I mean, it's just long drive, you know. And at some point in Nebraska and Iowa, Abigail's like asking a million questions. Abigail's 11 years old, and she's asking a million questions like she always do. We call her Yappigail for a reason. That's her name, Yappigail. And she wants to know the details. She's a detail person. What time are we going to get home? You know, we're getting home tomorrow. Where are we going to spend the night tonight? How far are we going to drive tonight? Is there going to be a pool in the hotel? There's all the questions, right? You know, and I'm like, Abigail, I don't know. We'll drive when I feel like I'm tired and we'll stop. You know, I've been up since 5 this morning, and, you know, it might be 9 o'clock. And so we're getting a little bit later in the day, and Abigail's like, Dad, you know, I bet you can make it home all the way. And then Nathan's like, yeah, and I think you can, Dad. I mean, we're tired of hotels. You think we could just make it home? And I'm doing the math. I said, well, it could be 5 in the morning here. And I was like, well, I don't know. And then Karen chimes in and says, well, you know, you don't have to, but man, that would be great. And I felt like they're daring me. I'm doing the driving here, you know. I mean, I know I could share driving with my family, but then we'd never get here. You know, they drive slow, and I have a heavy foot when I'm driving through Nebraska and Iowa. I mean, I'm just, you know, just wide open, right? And so and I can't have. So anyway, so we get to Chicago. It's about 11 o'clock, and the Karen's like, what are you going to do? I'm like, well, if you guys promise to stay awake and keep, you know, and Nathan slept through Nebraska. I mean, I said, Nathan can sit in the front, and sure enough, Nathan was like, you know, keeping me awake, and sure enough, we made it, you know, 1,300-mile drive in one stretch, you know, got here at 5 in the morning, and I was exhausted. So they dared me, and I answered the call. So we've been daring each other, right? And today we dare you to care. I'm daring you to care. And, you know, we need to understand that disciples of Jesus Christ, that's what we're called to do. We're called to care. We're called to reflect the heart of God, the compassion of God, the love of God, the care of God in the way that we live. And unfortunately, many Christians, we just don't do a great job on this. We don't show that we care like we should on a regular basis. It's been said by many non-believers, non-Christians, that they would say that the church just don't care. They only care about themselves. It's true what they say. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Where's the care? And there's a sad story here in Philippians chapter 2, verse 20 and 21. And I think this really captures where a lot of people live today. And this is the Apostle Paul. He's talking to the people. He's writing this letter in prison in Philippi. And Paul is kind of feeling by himself, a little alone. And he said in verse 20, he said, I have no one else like Timothy. I mean, Timothy, I've got no one else. Just Timothy. Who genuinely cares about your welfare. So I've got a guy named Timothy in Philippi. He really cares about you. And I don't really have anybody else. I don't have anybody else that can speak on my behalf that really cares. And so verse 21, he said, all the others care only for themselves. Only for themselves and not for what matters to Jesus Christ. And I have to say truthfully, from time to time, that's a very real reflection of where I'm at, where I am sometimes. I care for myself, right? And I ask, hey, what's in it for me? Or what is it going to cost me? Or how is this going to benefit, right, me? We do that. We're always looking out for uno numero number one, myself. And Paul says, hey, I don't have anybody but Timothy who really cares about you, all the rest of them. They only care for themselves and not for what matters to Jesus Christ. And it's heartbreaking, isn't it? You know, the University of Michigan, a while back, did a comprehensive study on 14,000 college students from 1979 to 2009, a 30-year spread, right? And so from 1979 to 2009, and what they found that there was a drastic decline in empathy. empathy. If you're taking notes, the results of this massive study showed that we care 40% less about other people than we did in the 1980s. 40% less that we care. And so that raises the question, why? Why are we seeing the drastic decline of empathy to care? And there's a lot of theories out there, but a lot of experts argue that they believe one of the top causes is the rise in technology and social media, believe it or not. Technology and social media has actually caused people to care less. We'll give you three quick thoughts on this. You know, why technology and social media, you know, even in a lot of the things that had, you know, that it brings good about, good things, good benefits, but let us understand three ways that it helps us or causes us to care less. Number one, we are more obsessed with ourselves. We are more obsessed with ourselves. Studies have shown that 80% of what a person does on social media actually relates directly to the user. 80%. In other words, if I'm on social media, I'm going to see what I'm interested in, right? I'm going to see what you're saying about me. I look for who might like my post or who made a comment on a picture, right? Or who shared something of mine, right? And so we begin to think about ourselves, and about 80% of what we do on social media is related directly to us. And so it causes us to care less about others and for us to be more self-centered. Here's another reason. An overwhelming exposure to suffering desensitizes us. Overwhelming exposure. I mean, with technology, we can open up, we can get the news, right, 24/7. Non-stop. It used to be growing up, you got the news at certain hours of the day, and that's when you got it. You got up and you got the newspaper. You actually got a newspaper thrown at your house. You know, if you had a mailbox, it was put there. If you didn't have a mailbox, it was in your driveway. And you open up that news, and that news what the news that happened yesterday by the deadline of yesterday's news. In a fast-moving world, sometimes your newspaper was might have been a little outdated, but that's just how we rolled. But now we can just get it flooded, right? We can see it all on our timeline. And we see everything on a timeline. You know, we see post after post after post. We see one post, you know, with our families and friends, like someone's picture and someone's personal post, and then we see another post right after that post, a news story post, a video, a link. And we see everything on our timeline, and so we see our brain, it doesn't know how to separate what one is more important than the other. It just becomes a funnel of information overload, right? Information overload. So you may be scrolling through your news feed, right? And you'll see a new recipe for guacamole. I mean, who doesn't like a new recipe for guacamole? And then you see right after that a post about politics or some political scandal. And then right after that you find a funny cat video. And then right after that it's a disaster that happened in a certain part of our world, a hurricane or a tornado or a tsunami. Literally, our brain just doesn't do well to distinguish between which one's more important, the guacamole recipe and the hurricane. It's just all in our head, and it's all over information overload, and everything becomes equal on a page, and because it's equal on a page, it becomes equal in our mind. Y'all with me? Y'all feeling this? This is the world that we live in. Number three, a lack of personal interaction makes it easier not to care. That's what technology, has done. A lack of personal interaction. If you lose your job, for example, if you lose your job on Facebook and you post something, hey, I lost my job, and I see it, I'm going to show that I care, but I'm going to say, hey, I'm sorry, I'm praying for you. However, if you were to sit with me at a coffee shop or in my office and you were to tell me, hey, I've lost my job, and I can see, personally, I can see the desperation over your face as you begin to tell me how you're not sure how you're going to pay the bills and you're telling me how you can't pay for your daughter's dance routines, dance class, and how you're trying to figure out how to take care of your elderly parents. And I hear all this, and suddenly I'm moved. As a listener, I'm moved to a very deep place in my heart, and I care very deeply for you as I would if it were a conversation on social media. And the reality is this: it's easier for all of us to disconnect from a distance. It's easier to disconnect from a distance. And so, technology has caused us, that personal interaction to have lowered. I mean, you see it at the dinner tables. Everyone got their smartphone. Now, 15 years ago, yes, we had conversation. Nobody had a phone. I mean, you had a flip phone, but that didn't do anything. There was nothing on a flip phone that you could, but now you got all the apps. And everyone's in their own little world, and technology has done that. There's a lack of personal interaction, and it causes us to care less. So what's the challenge here? Well, we need to understand that as followers of Christ, if you're a follower of Christ, we are called, for so much more. We are called to have a heart of compassion, empathy, to care. Now, I know last week we talked a little bit about compassion as it relates to sharing your faith in light of someone's eternal soul. We talked a little bit about that. But today I want to dig a little bit deeper this morning with this idea of compassion as we dare to care for others. So two thoughts here. Number one, we need to understand that true compassion demands action. True compassion. I'm going to talk about real compassion here. Demands action. In fact, the Greek word that translated as compassion is this word. I've been practicing the Greek word all week long. But the word splachignomai. Splachignomai. Okay? And I mentioned it last week that this word compassion means from deep within. But the Greek word, I had this incredible word picture of the word compassion, and it means to have the bowels yearn. Now, I'm not sure what that is. I mean, I think I do. It sounds like a very bad Taco Bell meal, right? But this is what you see in the Bible dictionary. Blachizomai, to make or to have the bowels churn. In other words, it means to have this very deep or to feel this deep sympathy. To be moved to action. That's the heart of it. And so that's powerful. It's not just an emotion, but it's an emotion that calls us to do something about it. It's an action. And so true compassion, it demands action. I read an article about this word, and the author of this article, he kind of described, in words, this idea of this deep compassion that blachizomai produced. And it says, imagine driving up on a car rack. And probably you've all experienced that before. You come to a car wreck and it's really, really bad. And you have this, right? You have this sinking feeling. And in the back of your mind, you say, I hope they're okay. That looks terrible. You know, and then as you get closer to the wreck, you see two, you know, a body or two, you know, and they're getting care, but they're on the road. And all of a sudden, that feeling hits you even deeper. And then, as you pass by, you say, wait a minute, I think I know who that is. I recognize that car. It looks like I know these people. Someone that you know, someone that you loved. And all of a sudden, that blood schistosomiasis kind of hits you hard, right, in the stomach, the kick in the stomach, right? I mean, you're feeling it. It caused you to pull over. And even though the police officer and the EMS is already there, you feel like, I'm deeply affected by this. It caused you to move. That's just the idea of blood schistosomiasis. Y'all with me? And so, here's the second thought. To say that you care, but not act, is to not care at all. To say that you care, but not do anything, is not to care at all. And so to say, yeah, I care, but you don't do anything, right? Do you really care? That's the question. Do you really care? And oftentimes we see something on our social media, we see something on Instagram, we see something on Facebook, right? And it's, we see, oh man, that's terrible. A tragic. And what we do, we click. We click like. You know, and which is kind of weird because how you like something that's something to something that's so bad. And so Facebook over time had figured this out and said, yeah, let's create some other options there. So they got the hug and they've got the crying emojis. You know, but we click and we think, okay, I cared. Can I just say this, and I hope this maybe resonate. Caring is not clicking. Caring is acting. That's the true compassion. Now, what's great about technology, what's great about social media, it's informational. It allows us to see a need that we may have not known earlier or before, but we see that need and it causes us to spring to action beyond the click, beyond the like. You know, it's information that can empower us to move to action. And so caring, it's not just liking a post, but it's actually loving a person. It's picking up the phone and having a conversation. Hey, I saw this. How can I help you? How can we help you in this situation? And I thank God for that. Oftentimes Facebook has informed me about what's going on here in our congregation. And have allowed me and our staff to do things. But by the way, we don't always see. I'm not on Facebook 24/7. And my timeline moves very fast. And you say, hey, if I put it on Facebook, I hope Pastor Scott sees it. Maybe. So sometimes that's not the catch-all. You know, Facebook may not work. But yeah, you get some other information out for your people and your surroundings. People are following it. And sure, it's informational. I pray that we don't just care by just that we think by caring that all we do is click and say we like it or we hug it or whatever we do. It's more than that. And so as I think about this, and I think about this idea of compassion, and we look at the life of Jesus, and every time you see the word compassion here in the gospel as it relates to Jesus, every single time in the gospel, you see Jesus, when he was moved with compassion, he was compelled to do something about it. There was an action that took place. He just wasn't moved with compassion and then moved on to the next thing. There was something that he did. And I got several examples here. I want you to look at Mark chapter 1, verse 40 and 41. It's on your handout notes, on the screen, in the Bible. Jesus, in Mark chapter 1, verse 40 to 41, a man with leprosy came and knelt in front of Jesus, begging to be healed. And he said, if you're willing, heal me and make me clean. And Jesus said, and he would move with compassion, right? Bless your domain, right? Jesus reached out, right? There was an action step. He reached out, and then he did what? He touched the man. He touched the man, and he said, I'm willing, be healed. So his compassion led him to an action. He did something. Matthew chapter 14, verse 14, Jesus saw a crowd, a large crowd, as he stepped away from the boat, and then he had compassion, it's the same Greek word, blechizomai. He had compassion on them, and so what did he do? He healed the sick. He healed them. He didn't say, hey, be praying for y'all. No, he didn't say, hey, hope you do okay. He did something. He was moved to compassion, and he did something. Matthew chapter 20, there's some blind guys, they're crying out to Jesus, right? And Jesus, verse 34, had compassion on them, blechizomai. And he had compassion on them and touched their eyes. He was compelled to move. And immediately they received their sight and they followed him. Jesus felt compassion, therefore he acted. And so true compassion, it demands action. Demands action. To say that you care but not act is to say it to not care at all. And it's tragic that we live in a world that's 40% less in empathy than we did 30 years ago. And I pray that the church of God, that the church of Jesus Christ will be known for kindness in action, for love in action, for compassion. That we will be known for a heart for people. Not just around the world on the fringes to our missionary, but right here in our own backyard. To really care for the people around us. And so what I want to do is just make some applications and then we'll wrap this up. Number one, if you're taking note, compassion, this is what compassion does. It interrupts. That's what compassion does, it interrupts. Again, when you look at Jesus, he was interrupted over and over and over again by different needs. Interrupted. Mark chapter 6. Don't have to go there. I just put the reference there. But Mark chapter 6, Jesus and his disciples, they've been working their tails off in ministry. I mean, they have been going nonstop, 100 miles per hour. In fact, they were so busy that they hadn't had a chance to stop and have a meal. Okay, I mean, that's how busy they were. And so Jesus says in Mark chapter 6, hey guys, let's take a break. We need to rest. I mean, that was Jesus' idea. We need to take a break. Let's take a break, let's rest. And I don't know if you've ever been like that, you know, where you just, hey, I've been going and I need some me time. You know, I need to rest. I need a break. Somebody take the kid before I give him away, kind of an idea, you know? I mean, you know, I need a break. I need my me time. I need to rest. I need to take a nap. I need to chill. We all need that, right? And that's what Jesus was, right? Hey, we need some me time, guys. And just when he said that, all of a sudden the big crowd just showed up. And the Bible says that Jesus was moved with compassion. Remember, Jesus hadn't had a meal. You know, all day. They haven't ate all day. They wanted to rest. But Jesus got up and began to teach the crowd, teaching them because he was moved with compassion. Jesus was interrupted in his me time. He said, I'm going to go and serve them. Luke chapter 8, another passage. He was on his way to heal a dying girl. And on the way, there was a woman that needed to be healed with the issue that she had for 12 years. And Jesus was interrupted. And, you know, he could have said, hey, I've got to help this girl that's dying. But in that moment, God had Jesus stop to take care of this woman in that moment to take care of her. And then he went and healed that girl and healed her as well. Perhaps my favorite stories in this. It's Mark chapter 2, and Jesus is teaching that the four attendant day, the house was packed. It's in the house. The house is overflowing with people. And then Jesus, you know, he's in the middle of the lesson, and all of a sudden, the roof started to collapse. And there were four guys that brought their friend who was paralyzed, their paralyzed friend. There were four guys that wanted to get their paralyzed friend in front of Jesus. And they couldn't go through the front door because it was packed. And so they climbed to the roof and dig into someone's house. And they interrupted Jesus' teaching. Now, I don't know about you, but if that were to happen right now, I'd be calling security. I'd say, hey, what's going on? I'm being interrupted. I've worked hard on this message. You know, why am I being interrupted by what's going on up here? But Jesus, right, he stopped, looked at the man, he listened to the man, the lower the man, he listened to him, he forgives his sins, and he healed the man. He healed the man. And so I'm going to argue all day long that God oftentimes works through, if you're taking notes, divine interruptions. Divine interruptions. And oftentimes, we miss them. We miss the divine interruptions. You know why? Because we're too busy. We're too busy worrying about me. You know, ourselves. That we don't have eyes to look around the needs around us. You know, people love to do ministry when it's convenient. Oftentimes, we see in the scripture that ministry is inconvenient. It never comes on your timeline, on your schedule. Ministry interrupts. Ministry is inconvenient sometimes. And Jesus, he was interrupted. But through every interruption, he saw a God moment, and he answered those interruption moments and met the needs. God may move you to pick up the phone and have a conversation with someone today, this week. God, or you're driving along and there's someone with a flat tire, and God said, hey, I want you to pull over. And you felt God telling you, pull over. And you decide to, you know, hey, I'm going to be in the Indianapolis 500. You fantasize, I'm going to be in the Indy 500 here, and I'm going to change tires like I'm in a pit crew or something. And so you do it. You pull over. You take care of the need. Or you stop to listen to that annoying person in your life. Y'all got that annoying person? Blah, 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 blah. You never get a good word in, right? You always listen, but you say, you know what, this person is looking for a friend. I'm going to be a friend and meet that person in their need. And I'm going to listen. You know, and by the way, every life group, every small group had that person. And if you say, well, I don't know anybody, well, hashtag, it might be you. They all have one. You let the Holy Spirit interrupt you because God oftentimes works through divine interruption. And you answer the need. Compassion number two, it cost. It cost something. Y'all know the story, Luke chapter 10, the Good Samaritan, right? There's the Jewish man who's been beat up, left for dead in the middle of nowhere, and this Good Samaritan walks by, and remember, Samaritans and Jews, they don't like each other. They hate each other. But the Good Samaritan sees that man is in need. And so the Bible said that he went to that man, bandaged him up, picked up the bloody guy, put him on his donkey, took him to the next town, went to the hotel, and put two nights out of his own money, out of his own pocket, told the innkeeper, he said, hey, you take care of him, I'll come back in 2 days and I'll pay my dues. It costs him something. Compassion costs us. And oftentimes in our culture, we don't want to, we want to keep what we have. We don't want to pay the cost. And we might say, hey, I'll just retweet it. I'll just like it. I'll just show that I care. If I retweet it, maybe that get out there, you know, and that'll help the cause. I'll favorite it. I'll share the link. But true compassion generally costs us something. Sure, go ahead and share it. Put the information out there. Share a need. But lead by example. Lead the way. Lead the way in your generosity. Let it cost you something. You know, clicking something is clean. Compassion is messy. I mean, compassion means you got to roll up your sleeves. And you got to do something about it. The Good Samaritan rolled up his sleeves. He could have easily just took a picture and snapped it on Instagram. Not that they had it back then, but he could have done that, right? He could have told the next guy, hey, there's a guy up there that needs help. You take care of it. Now, he saw the need. The man, it was between life and death for this guy. He rolled up his sleeves, and it cost him everything. It cost him something. And so some of you, you're going to be moved to compassion. You're going to be moved to do something about it. You're going to mentor an inner city kid, and it's complicated. You're going to serve an LP kids or LP students, and your heart's going to be captured by some 15-year-old who's cutting themselves. Or you're going to foster or adopt a child. And the transition, you know, and the baggage that they bring, it can be messy. It can be messy. And it's going to cost you something. But that's what compassion does. Compassion costs. My pastor in Florida, he always said this. You can't do ministry on spare time and pocket change. Compassion, you're going to have to, you go in. But you can't do compassion ministry on spare time and pocket change. So compassion interrupts and it costs. And number three, it changes lives. It changes lives. That's what compassion does. Everywhere Jesus went, he was moved. When he was moved with compassion, life would change. I can't think about the greatest example of him. He demonstrated his love toward you and me. He loved us so much that in his great compassion, he died on a cross for you. It cost him everything. It interrupted his perfect place of eternity where he was on the right hand of the Father. It interrupted, but he did it so that your life and my life can be changed. And he's still changing lives. He's still making a difference today. In the next week, we have an opportunity to care compassion for someone's eternal soul. I talked about this last week a little bit, right? Next weekend could be a weekend that changed someone's life for eternity. And I challenge you to care enough for your friend, to show compassion, say, hey, you know what, I'm going to invite, we got invite cards, or, you know, in the chairs. Not every chair has one, but look around. Take these cards, I've been handing them out. Invite people, having conversation on the phone. Sure, you can share it on Facebook, and I want you to. But do more than that. Do more than that. People are more likely to come, not because you shared it on a Facebook post, but they're more likely to come when you actually have a conversation and then personally invite them to come. And then they say, hey, I can come Sunday morning. I said, okay, perfect. I'll be there. What time do you think? What time is good for you? I'm coming to the 11 o'clock hour. That works for me. Perfect. And that might not be your normal hour, you know, or 9:30 might not be your normal hour, but you say, hey, I'm going to do whatever it takes because it cost me. If that means I got to get up a little bit earlier, or Saturday night, okay, if Saturday night works for them, I'll come Saturday night. I've had this happen before. Someone said, hey, I got some people coming on Saturday night. I got people coming on Sunday morning. So Pastor Scott, just letting you know, I'm going to be at both services. Because I love my friend, I invited him to come. So I'm coming Saturday night. I'm coming Sunday morning. So I could be with them. Because this matters. It matters. And so I hope this week, Sam Hornish, this weekend, Saturday night, 5 o'clock service, Sunday morning, 9:15, and 11 o'clock. It's going to be awesome. God won the Indianapolis 500. He has a story. Get to share some fun story, but then he can also talk about that moment where God intercepted his life. And his life would change. There's one more to take away from this. In a few weeks, starting next week, we start collecting food for Thanksgiving food drive. Detroit Thanksgiving, man, that's been a ministry project we've been doing every year to meet the people, the needs in our communities. Our outreach director, Amber Lemons, has been working so hard on this. Been working on this since pretty much the day after Thanksgiving last year. I mean, she worked hard on this. And this year, our prayers, last year we gave 1,200 meals. This year, our goal is to give away 1,500 meals. That's almost 7,500 people. And we got multiple churches coming along us and other organizations, but we lead the way. I mean, our church is the flagship of this outreach. And God has provided every year the people, the food, the finances. And God has blessed us every year. This year coming up, it's starting, you know, you got in your program, you see a little bookmark for you, the time of your grocery shopping list every week, you start bringing it next week. You say, hey, can I just pay money? You can do whatever you want. Hey, maybe you don't have much to give. Everybody can do something, I believe. Maybe it's a few cans. But maybe you say, can I serve? Absolutely. All this information on this website, DetroitThanksgiving.com. And I want you to just kind of see this video. It's about a 1-minute video just to kind of capture what God has done last year. Show the video.
Support this year's Thanksgiving distribution. Why is everyone so happy in this video? It's really quite simple. They're providing, through a full meal, the love of Jesus to families this Thanksgiving. Providing this many families with a full meal at Thanksgiving is no small or easy task. It takes volunteers of every age, young and old, from across our community. And it also takes the support of special people like you. Please join us by scanning the QR code and donating to Detroit Thanksgiving today.
So compassion, right? It's going to cost. It's going to cost about $30,000 to $40,000 to do this. You know, maybe there's someone here, you say, you know what? We're going to be a part of this in some way or shape or form. Compassion, at the end of the day, we believe it's going to change lives. That's why we do it. We don't just give away a meal just because we want to feed them physically. We want to feed them in a spiritual way, the love of Jesus. And so I dare you. We dare you. We dare you to care. We dare you to go. We dare you to be generous. We dare you to serve. We dare you to grow. We dare you to follow Jesus. I want you to look at the person next to you, and I want you to mean it with some blood, chisel my, okay? I want to hear it deep. I want you to look at the person next to you and say, I dare you. Come on now. Say it like you mean it. I dare you. Let's pray. God, we thank you. Help us to go out and to live the life you want us to live. Help us not to play it safe. Help us to go full force, living for you. To follow you, to serve, to grow with other believers, to be generous, to go and tell, and to care about the people around us. God, I pray for this next couple of weeks, this next weekend with Sam Hornish. I pray we do our part this week. Get the cards out, invite people, pick up the phones, whatever it takes, whatever it takes, we do it. Help us to listen to the Holy Spirit as you show us what to do and lead us to ministry with others. In Jesus' name I pray.